Now, I have to admit to, in terms of your solo career, which I have followed with great interest in probably the last couple of decades or so, a bit of a late developer, really, because I seem to remember, Steve, that back in the 1990s, I remember seeing you promoting Guitar Noir in 1993, but I seem to recall that those gigs, at least the electric gigs at that time, were quite rare. You did you did an awful lot of work playing acoustically, you know, classical concerts in Europe, really. So something of a niche thing, and then, you know, obviously in more recent times with your solo work, say that's in, you know, in the last decade, really, you've really come back to listeners' attention, and with this latest development with the Genesis Revisited, it is really a career renaissance.
I think it is.
I mean, and obviously you've won polls, and you're almost the darling of progressive people, really.
Yeah, well, it's always nice, of course, to be appreciated. You know, full houses are always good. You know, it's I think, you know, that they're various types of music that I've been involved with in the past. I was involved with rock, first of all, and then I spent a fair amount of time playing nylon guitar. I found that at a certain time that I was doing more acoustic concerts than I was rock, but I was still mixing it throughout out the out those years, and I'd sometimes find myself playing in, you know, other places. It wasn't always England. I'd be touring the States, so I'd be touring places like Hungary or South America, and so it's very hard when you look back the over the whole of your history, you realise that, you know, you've been doing records as variously as Baroque with a bit of Bach and blues. And beyond. So I've been involved with all those genres, but in a way, the rise or the renaissance of interest in progressive music, in a sense, fusing all those disparate genres, that's been perfect for me, in a way, which has enabled me, I think, now, you know, now that there is a rock press, and there's a rock radio, and there's a rock TV for it, I think, you know, music got to a certain point where it couldn't get simpler and had to start expanding its glossary of terms. And where did people start to look? You know, was it world music? Was it jazz? And I think the idea of progressive stuff for people who get bored easily, it keeps shifting. Music that's full of surprises, I think that's what appeals to people who like music to creep up on them by stealth and surprise them, much the way a story does, a film, a drama. And so you can have great sort of characterizations within those things. You can have grotesques, you can have melodic moments, you can have atonal things, as the Beatles showed way back in the 60s, that it was possible to mix genres wonderfully, in their case. Of course, with Manpower reigning supreme at that time, it's a little different from now, where technology has moved on from the mellotron, and, you know, we're able to do things virtually, perhaps, that at one time would have taken a whole ton of people. I mean, I've just done an album where there's 200 tracks going on some of these things, just because we can. You know, we can stick each violin on a separate track. We can have the tambourine coming in where we want it. We don't have to do mix downs like we did in the early days when we were working 16 track.
Yes. Well, your renaissance then, really, I think what you're saying, it's coincided with a general interest in progressive, and
I think so, yeah.
I mean, coming on to the new solo album, Steve, is it going to have a slightly different texture with the strings? Yeah.
Yeah, it does. I think it's as much about orchestra as it is about rock, and it's also as much about ethnic instruments as it is about what we consider to be mainstream. And I'm only just describing it in a nutshell here, but in a way, I'm trying to reflect separate atmospheres with different energies. In a way, you know, you get a moment of singer and band, sometimes like a folk ensemble, and then it gets taken up by huge orchestral forces, and then it's back to something very primitive and urgent and percussive, and then it moves on. So in a way, it is very progressive in spirit, probably more progressive than anything I've done before, because I feel that if you use the orchestra in the wrong way, it can sound frumpy. It just won't swing. It isn't going to work. You know, I want to use orchestras for what they do best. You know, that dark thing that they do when orchestras sound really elemental and it's really drumming up a storm. That's great. Mm-hmm. I love that. Those moments of symphonies where that happens. When it's, I'm particularly a great fan of the Russians and the Eastern Europeans, when it sounds most Slavic, if you like, sounds most elemental. You know, there's a moment where that meets with Led Zeppelin, where Zepp meets the Beatles, meets Tchaikovsky, Borodin, Prokofiev, all those guys, Grieg, Chopin, all those guys who could really write. I'm thinking, yeah, you know, there ought to be a hybrid here. It ought to be possible. It ought to be possible to take it right back to the campfire, just have a lone player playing the duduk or the Arabian oud or the tar. I've got a guy from Azerbaijan on this album called Malik Mansurov, who's like the John McLaughlin of the tar. So he plays virtuosically. He's very fast, but these wonderful trills that sound a bit like the first time you ever heard the Celeste playing Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. You think, how's that done? What's that instrument? And it's a bit like discovering Ravi Shankar for the first time. So I'm thrilled to you know, present him perhaps to a wider audience who would have no idea what his instrument is, let alone the fact that he's the foremost exponent of this in the world.
Would you say then, Steve, that this album, and it's obviously fresh in your mind, and does it really successfully bring together, would you say, all your sort of influences over the years, more than perhaps recent albums or any album, you know?
I think so, because I've denied myself nothing on it, but I've justified everything. For instance, there's some nylon guitar work, but I use one as a sort of introduction to a vampiric song, and then to join two very separate pieces of music, one which is dark and percussive and quite driven in a rocky sort of way, and then something which is very sunny and Californian on the other side of it, you know, where Crosby, Stills meets the Beatles and that whole psychedelic era. And I thought, well, but you couldn't have two tracks that are more separate, but I've joined them with a piece of nylon guitar that wanders in and out of a style that might be closer to Chopin, some of the Chopin pieces, and then bring in more Spanish influences, and trying to sort of lead it by the nose almost from one country to another and from one era to another, so that by the time you arrive at the other end of it, which is, I think of as sunny California in the swinging 60s, it's you haven't really noticed. You're ready for it by then, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
Well, that's a theory anyway, and if I may have succeeded, I may have failed, but that, you know, that's the album on its extremes. But I think there is a template for this, and it's around about the time of Sgt. Pepper and Magical Mystery Tour and Abbey Road, where you've got great writers and great forces coming together with great production ideas and tremendous risk. Because don't forget, the Beatles felt, just before Pepper was about to come out, everyone was nervous in the Beatles camp that they'd perhaps gone too far, and yet, of course, the world was right behind them because the whole world was invited onto that album. You felt that it was the depiction of a crowd. It was every man, and not just on the streets of Liverpool, but Delhi perhaps as well. So I think it brought the world together in a tremendous way that will never be repeated. But I'm sounding like Churchill here. You've got to stop me.
We'll fight them on the beaches, yeah. No,
they fought them on the beaches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's always exciting when an artist talks about their brand new album. And I'm just wondering, is it going to be quite not a quantum leap, perhaps, Steve, but a natural progression from your previous studio album?
I think it is. I think it is the most mature work. I know people don't say this. It's not street cred to say it's the most mature work I've ever done, but it's certainly something I've thought about, and there were lots of things on it I thought, oh, I probably shouldn't include this, because I keep coming back to these Slavic harmonies, you know, these things that I understand instinctively. Why is it I'm writing so many bits that are quite similar to each other? So I thought, well, what we've got to do is look at it a little bit like concerto and symphonic form. So allow the song to be as long as it wants to be, and allow it to meander into these separate sort of, it's almost like a battleground, isn't it? Separate campfires with one lot and then the other lot and then the other lot. What were they doing? The bowmen were doing this, but what were the other lot doing? What you know, the great horsemen, what were they doing? So I see it all as so much of it influenced by folk music and by the people that made up what we now think of as Europe. So I wanted to go right back to music's roots at times, and not always do it in a sophisticated way, but to borrow from folk, not to be afraid really to go anywhere. That was it, to boldly go.
Yeah,
that was it, you know.
Well, that's true progressive music, isn't it?
Yeah. And I really don't really care if it sells a light. The main thing is I'm in love with it, you know, that I want it to be the genuine article. I'm tired of counterfeit. I'm tired of politics. I want the real thing. So there we go. I'm giving it the heavy sell here, but I'm being honest.
Well, you're whetting our appetite, certainly. I remember when we spoke previously, it was quite interesting, actually, because I think one of the questions I asked you was about influences, and you said to me, Steve, that you can be in, like, you know, a clothes shop or something, and hear something on the, you know, the Muzak, and
yes,
that can inspire you. And I thought, well, there's somebody who's obviously very receptive. You know, it sounds like this album is completely, you know, open to influence and taking risks. I think that's what we were talking about, really. Taking risks in music is always interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, for instance, you know, you're talking about that. You know, you might be out somewhere. I remember hearing the band Monsoon for the first time when I was in Oxford Street, and thinking, wow, that sounds great, doesn't it? Hearing sitar with a driving beat behind it, that sounds fab. It seemed like there was a thread again, you know, almost as if a young band had been listening to George Harrison. And it turned out later I knew the drummer. And you know, that was interesting. So yeah, it's I am open, and it's this thing about perhaps when you're out and you're not sitting down listening to the latest record that someone says, oh, you should listen, this sounds really wonderful, and it doesn't sound that wonderful, but that's because you're listening to it and not hearing it. If you're doing something else, you'll just hear it and think, oh yes, I didn't realize that was that same album that I heard that I thought wasn't up to scratch, but I'm hearing it now, and here's a really nice moment of it. That's really good, isn't it? Yes, perhaps I better give it a retrial, give it a go.
I'm sure. Hopefully, we'll talk about the new album when it's when is it due out?
Well, I think it'll be out. I'm hoping it'll be out as early as February. But if it goes back further, it'll be because the industry takes a while to rev up and get the factory fires going, and so. And there'll be touring plans as well, so you know, it's on slightly shifting sands. But it's the stereo is done. We're doing the 5.1 mix at the moment, and so I'm basically letting Roger get on with that until he's got something to play me, and then I'll go in and say to him, "Well, I think this works. That doesn't work. he's probably dreading my input, but we've got a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be his credit on this one. Roger King, I'll be saying, you know, much like with Stephen Wilson, next year supposed to be remixing some of my early catalogue. I'm going to let him do it. I'm going to stand back from that and just say, well, there's some heavyweight atmospheres. It might be nice if those are wraparound moments. Don't be afraid. I would say that to people with 5.1. Don't be afraid to use all of the speakers. Don't just use an adapted stereo and have ambience behind. The technology that will do that for you. There are programs that will do that. No, you want to sit in the middle of the orchestra. If you've got a big chorus, you might as well have it front and back. You'd be surrounded by it. It works wonderfully well doing that sort of thing. We did that with the Skrakat album, with the chorus of Tall Ships. Front and back equally, everything. Big chorus.
You've just highlighted why perhaps some of these 5.1 mixes are a bit disappointing, because they're not done, you know, in the way that you're describing.
Yeah, well, I have ideas about that. I mean, for instance, when we did the Royal Albert Hall, Ben Fenner was mixing that, who mixes the sound live, and I said to him, just one thing, because I was working on the new album and letting him get on with that, I said, just one thing, for Fountain of Samarsis, those Mellotron crescendos, I said, it's supposed to be about water, why don't we have them start in the front and then end up behind, so that it's like a wave going over people. Here's a moment we could do this. You can have people seeing the music. This film for the ear rather than the eye. You want it to come out, stand in front of you and envelop you and do that wave, that thing, that tidal wave.
Friends actually who have the 5.1, they've been disappointed.
Yep.
Because they say films are quite well mixed.
Yes.
But albums aren't.
But
so
albums.
So yes. Is that true then, Steve?
I think there's a lot of conservative thinking amongst sound mixers who won't use the full facility. There's a fear.
Mm.
But I've been listening in on some of what Roger's been doing with some of the moments on this new forthcoming thing, and I'm just thrilled with the brave, bold moves that he's doing, and I can't wait to hear it. You see, the thing about 5.1s is you think, you know, not everyone's got a 5.1 system.
Mm.
Of course, that's understood, but everyone's got a friend.
That's right.
Down the road, where they'll get to hear that at some point, hopefully when the dog's put out and the children are put to bed and what have you, and to give it that priority, as we used to do when we were teenagers, where you'd go to the guy who had the best stereo and crank it up during the day when the neighbours weren't going to complain and all of that. And that,
what you're saying, Steve, you know, if that was taken to its conclusion, you know, that could be a whole new experience for people these days.
Oh, absolutely,
in the digital age. I mean,
sure.
We've mentioned that previously, where you'd buy, you know, your favourite artist's album, and then you'd hot foot it back, and then you'd play the whole thing back to, you know, front to back. It just, we tend to just grab tracks, don't we? And that's the modern way, really. But
it's the playback of audio that we're really after, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, what do we have to do to make records sell more? Well, you know, better records, better mixing,
better experience. Yeah.
You know, better covers. So you can feel that you've got something of real value, in the way that when you travelled on the tube back in the old days and you just bought your latest fave album and you sat there with it proudly displayed across your knees, thinking, everyone's going to be thinking I'm so hip because I've got, you know, this latest album by this band. What was I thinking? But nonetheless, the important thing was it was important to me. And albums still are very important. I still think that they're the most important thing I can do is to make an album.
Have you got a title for your new album yet?
Well, I'm still kicking around things at the moment, it's by no means certain. I probably have the title, but you never know. Something else might come along at the last minute.
And you've got a bit of time.
Better.
Yeah. And you've got a bit of time, haven't you?
So I've got a little bit of time. Yeah.